here we are with my favorite congressman, because he is my congressman and because he is an extraordinary person, Richie Neal. As we speak, we're going to talk to him today about a lot of different things. Do you think Donald Trump, assuming he leaves office, which when we spoke last, you thought he would have to, barring a coup, he would have to. But assuming he leaves office and he gets into trouble or is in trouble because of criminal acts, do you think the Democrats should just leave him alone and say, okay, well, there's 70 million people voted for him, we don't want to alienate them, or do you think he should be held responsible?
I think you have to be held responsible. In addition, I think that the allegations that are likely to make their way still reside in the city and state of New York. The matter of the president's tax forms, that's an important consideration, and that case does not go away at the federal level as well. I think that instead the reminder here is that this was about the principle of Article 1 of the Constitution, and that was the right of the Ways and Means Chairman, or the right of the Chairman of the Finance Committee, to request a citizen's tax forms. I pointed out regularly that it was about principle, it was not about politics, and that the most far-reaching question was a determination as to how the IRS actually reviews a president's tax forms. And I think that that case does not go away either. So there's a lot of issues that are hanging out there, and I think that the law has to be followed. And in the state of New York, it strikes me that the district attorney, as well as the attorney general, they continue to pursue these cases.
Let's go to the Affordable Care Act, which you know so much about. Recently, they came before the Supreme Court of the United States. That act came before. Everybody assumed it was a goner, and it wasn't. What do you make of it?
Well, I'm pleased, and I think that, in fact, Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Kavanaugh, they've asked the right questions. And the question about the mandate is moot in the sense that Republicans repealed it. But recall that the mandate was actually the glue that held together the Affordable Care Act. The argument that we had was that if we could extend insurance to, in this instance, more than 20 million American people, the best way to do it was to require, as we do with automobile insurance and homeowners insurance, that people buy health insurance. And that is the whole notion of spreading risk. And risk assessment was a critical part of it. The Affordable Care Act, despite the criticisms and the 70 times Republicans have attempted to repeal it in the House of Representatives, largely as a messaging amendment, the reality is that 20 million more Americans have health insurance today. And let me say this with great satisfaction as one who helped to author that legislation. 100% of the children in Massachusetts have health insurance coverage. And more than 95% of the adults in Massachusetts have health insurance coverage. So the requirement of the mandate really was compelling, and it overwhelmingly worked. But the other argument here is the following, which I've always found humorous, if not so cynical. And that is when this Republican president, like former Republican leadership in the House and the Senate, when they would say, we're going to draft our own bill. In all the years I've been in the House of Representatives, Republicans have never agreed on health insurance. And right now, they still don't agree on how the best delivery system would be to make sure that the American individual has health insurance. So it's really, for them, I think it's methodology more than anything. I don't see any evidence that they're any closer to devising a plan. And President Trump, if you remember, he almost was dismissive of it during the campaign 4 years ago when he criticized the plan, and when he was asked by reporters what he would replace it with, he said, don't worry, pal, you're going to love it. Well, 4 years later, we've never seen a plan.
It's so true, no matter what he says. 2 weeks, a month, 2 months, it never happens. Richie, Biden gets in office. He has a House of Representatives. He has a very close Senate. What improvements can he make to the Affordable Care Act?
Well, he's going to have some regulatory authority that I think that he can undertake. I think once a Treasury Secretary is nominated and successfully confirmed, he'll have some options there. I also think that will be true in some of the other cabinet secretariats, and I think that there's room here to do a big infrastructure bill. And my suggestion, as reported in the Wall Street Journal this morning, after an interview that I did just a couple of days ago, I did say that I thought you could tie infrastructure to stimulus, to pandemic relief, and to climate change, which we did in the Moving Forward Act, which we included the Green Act, which was the most substantive piece of legislation as it relates to climate change to ever pass the House of Representatives. And my committee and I, we authored that legislation. So there are a lot of things that a president can do. I also would offer this perspective. If there's anything that's true about Joe Biden, it's that he is a creature of the Senate as an institution. And there are certain courtesies that they practice over there. It is a certain membership where I think there was at one time collegiality. But it's the first time, I think, since Lyndon Johnson that you're going to have an individual who is really reconciled to the idea of trying to work with Republicans in the Senate. Now, it's going to be tough, as we all discovered with the Merrick Garland nomination. I mean, Senator McConnell can be intransigent on a lot of issues. But there's another part of this that I think that's very compelling, and that is I think that Biden will exhaust every possible opportunity to bring some Republicans aboard. And I think that there is, again, an opportunity to secure help from Susan Collins. I think that Lisa Murkowski comes to mind, and I think that there might be other Republicans who are up in 2022 where addressing climate change, addressing the pandemic, and simultaneously doing a big infrastructure bill, perhaps all linked together, makes good legislative sense. If I were talking to Joe Biden, and I did talk to him about a month ago, but I've been talking to his team, they all are in accord with what I've just said, as I made that suggestion, as is Speaker Pelosi.
Let me ask you about, since you're talking about McConnell, his getting together on yet another relief package. Is it getting closer?
I think it is, and you have to do one. So I would suggest two things, and I've been in regular contact with the Speaker about this. Recall that she moved, in terms of compromise, from $3.4 trillion that we passed in May in what was known as the HEROES Act. That was an addendum to the CARES Act, and the CARES Act saved the American economy. It was bipartisan in nature. She was prepared to move from $3.4 trillion to $2 trillion, but she wanted to shorten the duration until the end of January, waiting to see what the result of the presidential election was in an inaugural day. So I think that there's widespread acknowledgement that the virus is surging, and economists left, right, and center all say you need an infusion of more federal help, as does the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, Jay Powell, who has regularly suggested that you cannot do this just with monetary policy. You need to do it with fiscal policy as well. And I think that that's where Senator McConnell is likely to find a short-term accommodation with us, and then perhaps after January 20th, a long-term accommodation.
Especially if Biden's the president.
Well, you're going to have no choice on that, because I think that the people that receive the checks, which we need to do again, I think that those are individuals, now they've run out of that funding. I think that, again, economists universally endorse the idea of greater liquidity in the system, which will subsequently also help to create and establish more demand. I think those are all parts of a pretty complicated economic picture, but I can say this with great confidence. We will not get the economy back up and going until we defeat the virus. Everybody understands that, I hope.
Okay, let's talk Nancy Pelosi. You know, and I know, that there are a couple of people in the Democratic Party, perhaps among the new progressives, in quotes, and AOC et al., who will not vote for her for another term. Will she win if she runs?
She's going to win, and she will not be challenged. And I am one of her vote-counting members, and I know that the people that I've been asked to contact, again, unanimously, are supporting her. I don't know where the challenge would come from within the Democratic caucus. Not only is she a really superb legislator, she's a good political figure, too. She's pretty good at this. I talk to her regularly, and I also think that she has been not only skilled in the challenges that have come before her, but she's been able to hold together a pretty fractured caucus. You know, Speaker O'Neill used to say that if we were a European system, that Democrats would be part of five different political parties. I think there's an element of truth to that. But Speaker Pelosi has done a pretty good job as the conductor of the orchestra in terms of making sure everybody plays their instrument correctly.
Richie Neal, we love talking to you. And when we come back the next time, I got lots more.